Yeah, it's a staple every week for this show. Mail It In Friday, and one third of the A team for Overdrive will be back on Monday. Brian Hayes returns from his vacation. It's been fun filling in all week.
Those other two characters are going to be back at work at some point.
They will,
too, pretty soon.
They
I think.
Definitely
yeah,
will be sharp
soon.
And ready to go. We had Jeff O'Neill on the had him on the show earlier this week. He is itching.
Said he was getting the itch.
He's getting the itch. Yeah. There's my co-host Dave Pullen, who never mails it in. It is fired up Friday.
I like Fridays.
For Dave Pullen. You love Fridays.
I enjoy Fridays.
And you know, we're going to chat with Michael Bradley in a couple of minutes. Their TFC is ready to fire it up on Sunday against DC United.
Yeah, so I have them somewhere in between what's happening in the NBA and hockey and what's happening in baseball. They, too, are starting their season, but they're almost doing it in a finishing fashion, mm-hmm. like a tournament format. And, you know, so many of these guys, Michael Bradley's been a fixture on the USA team and, you know, in world championship play and in high-level play. And I liken this more to a tournament than you know, a season
sure.
in a bubble. And that's what they've patterned it after. And they've had to adjust already with two teams dropping out, both Dallas and Nashville, because of COVID dropping out. But I'm really intrigued to talk to someone that's in the bubble.
Yeah,
we've heard so much about bubbles.
What is bubble life like?
What's life like in the bubble?
What's
their proximity to the NBA grouping?
Yeah, that's when we had Andy on, and of course her husband's on the coaching staff for TFC. I was asking the same thing, and they're figuring that out. Like, are you?
Did they even know it at the time? They probably didn't even know what.
No, I don't know if they, because John was on his way to Orlando at the time. But yeah, like, is it? Are you kind of looking over a fence and seeing LeBron and going, "Hey, buddy, how's that practice
going?" Or
maybe going
the other way on a roller coaster.
Yeah, that's.
Wait a second, who was that?
That is the tricky thing. If LeBron's on Space Mountain, the Lakers are in trouble.
Keep your head down.
Yeah, there's got to be a height limit. Usually, it's like, are you tall enough to be on this roller coaster? But for some, if you're over 6'6", you're in trouble, and that's pretty much the entire NBA.
Yeah, I'm sort of intrigued with that whole. They talked about, you know, whether the rides were going to be available for the players or some of the, you know, obviously they have all the restaurant facilities and all those sorts of things down there. It's been years since I've been down to Disney World down there. But quite a facility, and to house two sports in the same facility is, you know, no matter how far apart they are or whatever, it's still quite a feat.
Have you been to the wide world of sports at Disney World?
I have. Yeah, because there were a couple of Major League Baseball teams that actually had spring training there when it first opened.
Right. Didn't, Atlanta, yeah. Maybe?
I think maybe Kansas City.
Okay.
So there's multiple baseball stadiums down there. And speaking of places where, you know, you could go and play out of, if you're a Canadian baseball team that wants to play
in the middle of the winter.
In the U.S. somewhere. But there's so many spring training facilities that are top-notch. I've only been to a couple of them, but they're just absolutely gorgeous. And so we'll see how that plays out for the Jays up here and whether they do end up at a facility like that down there.
Yeah, and it's, you know, everyone's locked into what it looks like, what it sounds like. We've watched a few of the first matches on TSN, and it, you know, the pitch, it obviously looks professional. The broadcast looks professional. I would say that the one thing is it sounds a bit like a men's league soccer game, just because you don't have the crowd and you can hear players talking to each other, and you can hear it's such a crispness of the contact between the foot and the ball. And it's different.
Actually eliminated a lot of the crowd visuals, though, so it just looks like you're watching the game, and you almost forget that there's no crowd there.
Right. Well, we look forward to TFC playing a game. It's been a while. They're scheduled to play on Sunday at 9 a.m. against DC United. And joining us on Overdrive is the captain of Toronto FC, Michael Bradley. How are you, Michael? Thanks for joining us.
I'm good, guys. Thanks for having me.
The obvious first question is, what's life like in the bubble? How's it going?
Yeah, it's been good. You know, we have a group that has been together for a while. We've had a lot of different experiences, you know, being away from home in different periods, whether it's, you know, long preseasons or Champions League, you know, trips down in Mexico where we weren't really leaving the hotel. So we've been through stuff like this before, obviously not in this context, but it's, you know, it is what it is, and we're you know, doing everything we can to keep ourselves and each other safe, and obviously looking forward to the game on Sunday.
You know, in order to run this tournament, the league, in an ideal scenario, wants you just focused on soccer and not have to worry about the health and safety of yourself and your teammates. Have you found so far in the first few days that your number one priority can be soccer?
Yeah, I mean, look, to a certain extent, for this next period of time, I think, you know, everybody in the world, regardless of what you do, we're all trying to learn how to navigate our everyday lives in the, you know, in the midst of a pandemic. So, you know, we're, you know, cognizant of that and making sure that we are, you know, doing all the little things to, you know, minimize the risk of contracting the virus as much as possible. You know, but again, the closer you get to a game, certainly the excitement and the, you know, that the energy comes just in terms of being able to step back on the field again.
Michael, just describe to us what the bubble constitutes for TFC. We've heard so much talk about, oh, well, hockey's going to be in a bubble, basketball's going to be in a bubble, soccer's going to be in a bubble. So what is the bubble consist of for you? Are you in the same hotel as a couple of other teams? Are you seeing other players wandering around? You know, your practice, if you got an isolated practice facility, how is the whole thing set up for you?
Yes, I mean, look, I think every league's bubble is going to be a little bit different. You know, ours, you know, we have, you know, there's two hotels that are, you know, on the Disney property that are, you know, just across the water from each other. We have, MLS has both of them. You know, they've sectioned off a bigger area around both hotels where obviously nobody from the outside can come in. You know, we're in the smaller of the two hotels, which is nice. It means that, you know, obviously, you know, there is absolutely interaction with other teams. You know, you see teams, you know, down in the lobby, in the elevator, walking to their meals, you know, whatever it may be. Obviously, everybody's trying to, you know, everybody's in masks when you're outside of your room. Everybody's still trying to be cognizant of things like, you know, social distancing and you know, not mingling too much with other teams, but you know, there's you definitely see other guys and other teams. You know, and since we've gotten here, we're just trying to settle into a routine of training and you know, finding ways to still enjoy the time with each other off the field. You know, but doing it in a way where we're sticking to ourselves.
Michael Bradley joining us on Overdrive. You like, we kind of joked because all eyes are on Orlando and the NBA's down there as well. How close are you to the NBA bubble, and is there any way that you potentially could bump into the Raptors or LeBron James?
Honestly, I couldn't even begin to tell you how close or how far they are. You know,
probably a good sign.
aside from our team floor and our training field and our meal room, I've not seen anything. And obviously the last part is to the extent that I understand, it's their bubble is different than our bubble, and I don't think there's any overlap between the two. So you know, obviously, yeah, we know that the NBA teams are starting to arrive down here. But again, I don't, more than that, I couldn't tell you.
You know, it's such a unique time to actually play the games, and, you know, we know physical talents, but to me, going in an environment like this, I think some of the things that your club has been through in terms of, you know, really tough losses, winning a championship, some of those things, and while players have changed, the core is still there. How important is the mental side right now versus the physical side of what you have to do?
Yeah, we've talked a lot about that over this last stretch. I mean, it's a huge part of it. You know, I mean, obviously everybody's coming off a long layoff. To a certain extent, no team, no player, or no team is going to be at their best right away. You know, and so at the beginning of this tournament, the ability to draw on the collective mentality of the group to find ways to win and to get results, even when, you know, even when things aren't perfect, even when, as you're still kind of playing your way into things, that part is so important. And I think the experiences that we've had as a group over the last, over the last 5 or 6 years, I think are going to help us in a lot of ways.
Now, on the physical standpoint, you've been rehabbing that ankle injury. What is your status for the upcoming games, which kicks off on Sunday against DC United?
I feel good. I feel strong and fit, and I'm ready to go. So on a personal level, I'm really excited.
Now, for Toronto FC, there's a lot of excitement with, you know, the run that you went on last year, the fact that your core is there, but you add a player in Pablo Piatti. What are your kind of your first interactions been like with him, and for fans who are eagerly waiting to see what he can do for Toronto FC, what's the scouting report on your new teammate?
Yeah, Pablo has done a great job over the last period of really, you know, working hard and getting himself fit. Obviously, he was a little bit unlucky in the beginning, before the league shut down. He picked up a little injury in at the end of preseason, and so he's worked, you know, so hard to put that behind him. And obviously, you know, as we've all had more time to train and start to get a feel for him and understand his qualities, I think, you know, we see more and more every day how good a player he is. He's a dynamic attacking player who can play from the left or the right. He's quick and shifty, he can put guys on the wrong foot, and so I think we're all excited to see how he can really add a different piece to our attack.
Michael, you're a senior guy and you've been through so much yourself, and you've played for different coaches, and one of the things that I'm looking at as a former player is, boy, what a temptation it would be for coaches to overcoach at times like this. And so have you had to have any discussions yet and say, hey, what are we thinking here in terms of that? Are you included in those conversations? Because, boy, you know, I've played for some coaches that their temptation to take over at a time like this would be so hard for them not to do it.
No, listen, when we talk about the experiences that we've had as a group, I mean, one of the things that can't go unsaid is the fact that you know, the relationship that we, the core group of our team that we have with Greg is incredible, you know. And so the experiences that we've all shared together, and the communication that exists, the relationship that exists, it means that we have complete trust and faith in him and you know, his ability to, you know, sound us out with certain things. I mean, it's that part is at a high level. And so, you know, there's constant discussion, communication. Obviously, you know, he's the coach, and whatever decisions he makes, we're always behind 1,000%. But the relationships and the communication that go into the work that we do every day is at a high level. So we all feel really good about that.
Michael Bradley, Toronto FC captain, joining us on Overdrive. TFC scheduled to play at 9 a.m. on Sunday against DC United. 9 a.m. When was the last time you had a pregame meal at 5:30 a.m.?
Yeah, it was a while ago. would have been some type of youth tournament, a bunch of years back.
Well, what do you plan on eating that early in the day? Like, I imagine it can't be your same meal that you would have for a typical match.
No, I mean, listen, I think, you know, every guy will handle it differently. I'm going to use the day tomorrow to make sure that I'm getting as much of the good things that I need in terms of, not just eating, but hydration, and then, you know, make sure you get a good night's sleep, and I'll wake up and, you know, have a little bit of breakfast, and then just, you know, be ready to play, and in some ways treat it like, treat the preparation in the morning like you would for a training session. You know, I personally don't see any other way to look at it all.
You know, it's been so fascinating to watch this tournament get going, and it'll be fascinating to watch you guys play and what level you can play at. But also, you know, the matches so far have been highlighted by, you know, events like Thierry Henry kneeling for 8 minutes and 46 seconds to honor George Floyd. You think of that first game, Inter Miami in Orlando City, with the moment of silence, the raising of the fists. As a leader in this league, how important is it for MLS to get this message out and also get the right message out?
Yeah, it's in a lot of ways, it's the most important thing right now. You know, it's regardless of anything else that goes on the field, to have a strong, united message in terms of, you know, the events that are playing out in front of our eyes. You know, that part is so important. You know, I know, you know, for me personally, and for us as a club, you know, to see the way all of our black players have handled this period has been incredible. But in particular, you know, Justin Morrow, who serves as the executive director for the Black Players for Change, you know, I we're all so proud of him and the work and the effort that he has put into, you know, really galvanizing, you know, the black players in our league, and the display that they put on the other night was strong and powerful. And, you know, I think it was an incredible start to the tournament.
Well, I've always admired your leadership as the captain of this team. And for years, it was usually just what you were doing on the pitch and in practices. But what you've done now, more recently, is even more fascinating. And even, you know, to tell your teammates to not be afraid to speak out. I know that is so important to you, and it means so much to you. And all the best to you and the team. And first off, stay healthy when you're in Orlando. And then second, win some matches.
I appreciate that, guys. We're looking forward to it. Thanks for the support.
There is Michael Bradley from Toronto FC, and just you know, the question about trying to keep soccer the priority, and it's easier said than done when you're dealing with the pandemic and you're down there in Orlando and Florida, and you know, and he's also been one of the outspoken players in the league when it comes to Black Lives Matters, and you know, it's like I said, one of the leaders of the sport. A lot of players are looking at him for that message.
You know, and he made a decision to come up to Toronto when he did, as a, you know, a big free agent, if you will, and then a decision to stay in Toronto over the years.
Yeah.
He loves it here, and, you know, obviously plays very proudly for Team USA in the world events. But he's been a real leader of that club, and we've watched that club just grow and grow. And I think we all sort of feel like insiders because of Andy Petrillo and her connection to it with John Conway, her husband. That's the coach of the Keepers there, and so even through the championships, but we watched it scrap through and really build, and Michael Bradley's just been an enormous, enormous part of it. And we're back to the decision about, you know, whether to play or whether not to, and now we're not talking about the pandemic, but we're talking about, you know, the social unrest, and the fact that I think he put it strongly how they could use it as a platform.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and Justin Morrow, who does lead up a very impressive group, and that was a grassroots thing, you know, from what I read about that the other night, that they just made a decision that they were going to do this, and there was buy-in from everyone involved, and how powerful it was. And it wasn't, you know, sometimes you'd see that start with a club and it would be sort of orchestrated, or, you know, coming almost too corporate, and there was none of that feeling at all with the decision they made to do what they did before that first match.
Yeah, and we worked together the day of Bubba Wallace at Talladega when the players, and the word that you made sure to highlight was organically walked with him in his car, in light of the noose that was in his garage, and how much the sports world has changed since the Colin Kaepernick kneeling, and who supported him, and which leagues and companies did not support him back then, and not to say that we've, you know, totally, you know, turned to 180 here, but, you know, there is much more in terms of the power of these leagues and the power of sports behind this movement, and you're seeing it in MLS, you will see it in the NBA, I know in some form you'll see it in the NHL, but it is. you know, we are in an era where players have that voice, and they're much more comfortable using it than they maybe did 10, 15, 20 years ago.
And social media gives them that platform as well, Mark. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got the vehicle that they can use it, and they can use it comfortably, but they can also learn from it. And I will, you know, qualify by saying social media can be a dangerous place to learn too, because it's not always fact-based.
Wow. Just look at this past week with Deshaun Jackson.
A little bit too opinion-based, mm-hmm. or you know, wherever you're getting your information from. But I think the willingness to learn is what has to happen. And, you know, and if a young soccer player can learn by the events that went on, you know, that have gone on so far in Orlando, rather, from their heroes. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what they're looking to. And, you know, as that sport continues to grow on this side of the world to the magnitude it has in every other part of the world, but we've seen MLS grow immensely, and this will all be part of the growth.
And just as I mentioned, Deshaun Jackson, who have made those anti-Semitic comments earlier in the week, the Eagles have come out with a statement, and they are disciplining Deshaun Jackson. No details on what the discipline is, but he is staying on the team, it appears, which that was one of the questions. Would the Philadelphia Eagles cut Deshaun Jackson following these words? And, you know, and you're also seeing, you know, an opportunity for Julian Edelman, who is Jewish, obviously a prominent player in the league, and he reached out to Deshaun Jackson, and it sounds like the two of them are going to both, you know, two different museums and getting their messages together. And
Cool stuff. I mean, it's cool, though, because it's a follow-up, right? It's somebody seeing something that's out of line and then following up, but not just dismissing it and being willing to help out and help educate. And educate, I think, you know, Mark, is sometimes a word that people look at and they associate it with not being smart. Mm-hmm. And that's not what it means to be educated. To be educated, you know, the smartest people in the world continue to be educated about things they aren't fully aware of.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes it's simply, you know, to be uneducated in no way means you're not smart. And I think that's sometimes, you know, a wrongly used term when you throw around the word, well, he's not educated. And it just means you haven't had the opportunity to learn or the awareness to learn. And Julian Edelman sharing that knowledge and sharing the awareness to share it.
Yeah. Well, look where it's taken you. You know, you graduated from Notre Dame, and you have an education not every hockey player has. And, you know, you play in the NHL, and then you work in all these different jobs that a typical player who retires from any league wouldn't go into. And one of the common kind of characteristics of Dave Pullen in working with you, you ask questions. You ask me questions. And a lot of times I think, why is Dave asking me? Why is he, you know what I mean? Like, here's a guy who's been through it all. But it is respecting other people's own experiences, the paths they've gone through, and what their perspectives, and also, you know, they have an education maybe that you don't have. And
it's funny because I use the word formal education because I played with some really, really smart guys who did not have a formal education. Some of them hadn't graduated from high school officially. Mm-hmm. And yet were really, really smart and really street smart and really savvy. But because they started playing junior hockey when they were 15 years old and they were on buses in Western Canada, they didn't get an opportunity to do the same things that, you know, I was able to do and to get a formal education. But in terms of street smart, in terms of the willingness to learn, and a lot of them did it later in their careers and went on to do some really cool things that, you know, they wanted to learn, and they went and learned. And reading is the best vehicle for me. I've always read, but the ability to just pick up a book and learn about something else is something that, you know, I'll never lose.
We're hoping to learn about a new CBA and also return to play being ratified by the NHL and the NHLPA by the end of the show. Still no news on that front, but we'll keep you up to date on that. Ben Foulkes from The Athletic will have much more on UFC Fight Island when we return on TSN 1050 and the TSN app. For our viewers on TSN 4, coming up next, it's SportsCenter with Kara Wagelin.
Now, back to Overdrive.
Overdrive continuing on TSN 1050 and the TSN app. Mark Rowe and Dave Poulin. A reminder that the captain of the show, Brian Hayes, is back on Monday.
The captain.
I was waiting for Mullis to play like the audience clapping, but he's joking with me right now. But Hazy B is back, and you are golfing with Bob McKenzie on Monday.
First time.
Really?
First time I've played with his son who hits it a mile. Sean hits it a mile.
Sean's one of those guys who's obviously a good athlete. He was a good hockey player.
Right.
And, you know, you pick up golf. You know, I think he was in his 20s when he picked up golf, and it was just like,
he's really good.
It's not too tough, right? Right?
So, he's a good player. He's a good player.
I don't know too many people that can pick up mixed martial arts in their 20s and say, it's pretty easy, but maybe there's been a few. Who knows?
Well, you know what? They're getting some really elite athletes, and they're getting elite athletes, I think, earlier, whereas, you know, they used to maybe get them from another sport. They played something else first and came over to mixed martial arts. But I just think they're getting elite athletes earlier on, and the talent pool continues to grow.
Well, with more on that, maybe he can provide some answers from The Athletic. Their MMA senior writer, Ben Foulkes, joins us on Overdrive. Good afternoon, Ben. How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. And I would mention a fellow by the name of Brock Lesnar. Took up MMA kind of late in life. Granted, after being a great college wrestler and then a professional wrestler, but it worked out okay for him.
Yeah, you know? that's true. And I guess there's the Greg Hardys, and you know, there's a few that have, you know, took up this sport a little bit later. And you know, you think of this sport, and you think of, you know, Dana White and UFC taking some jabs really a couple of months ago about this idea of a fight island. Well, now that they're kind of on the cusp of this happening, do you see the sport and UFC maybe being a pioneer in a way?
Well, sure, in a way. And you know, MMA had a lot of advantages in restarting. And for one thing, if we're going to talk about the fight island, it was not quite exactly what was pitched to us. That, you know, it was presented as if it was going to be this private island. Dana White said he had secured a private island, and it was going to, you know, octagon on the beach and all that. And it's Yaz Island in Abu Dhabi, which the UFC has been to a few times before. But it's a pretty good location for them to do something like this. And MMA, the structure of it makes it a little easier to return during a pandemic, because if you have a positive test from a fighter or a coach, and almost every fight card the UFC has done since restarting has had at least one, you can pull that one fight off the card, and the whole event can keep going. And it's a lot tougher in team sports, you know, if you're trying to, you know, the NHL trying to restart, and if you have a couple positive tests on the Penguins, it's like, what do? Do you pull them out of the playoffs just because of that? MMA has the advantage of being able to isolate people beforehand, in, you know, just the fighter and his team, and if you lose one fight here or there, you can still go on with the event. The show itself can go on. And even though this one on Saturday, right, UFC 251, they lost the main event for the first time. And fortunately for them, they had a really good replacement in Jorge Masvidal ready to go.
Ben, even that said about being different and being an individual sport, as golf is, and they've made an early entry back into the race too, but Dana White's done a lot of things right through this as well, with details and making sure everything's looked after. And from other sports have to look at it selfishly and say, what can we learn from how they've done things?
Sure, yeah. Well, I think that other sports are going to face kind of just a different situation in how they're going to do it. But I think one of the things that you've seen different with this particular series of events, the events in Abu Dhabi, is the testing has been way more rigorous just to get there and making sure that they're maintaining a little bit more of a bubble. That before, when they had events in Jacksonville or they had events in Las Vegas, and it was kind of, you know, you're testing people when they're in the host hotel, you're testing them before the event. But this one, you know, the fighters, they did their test wherever they were before they flew out. Then they had to quarantine before they could even get on a plane. Then they get on a plane, go to Abu Dhabi, they take another test, quarantine again. You know, been cooped up in a hotel room for a couple of days by the time they're finally let out in Abu Dhabi, and then they still have another test to go before they get to actual fight time. And so I think that we're seeing, like, especially for an event like individual sports like mixed martial arts, it can be done. It's just, it's kind of a pain, and it's going to be a very rigorous process in order to do it right.
Ben Foulkes from The Athletic joining us on Overdrive. So UFC 251, a.k.a. UFC Fight Island, goes this weekend in Abu Dhabi. And, you know, Gilbert Burns is supposed to be in the main fight. He tests positive. He can't go. You mentioned Jorge Masvidal. He's going to go. And this was the fight that everyone had expected initially and really everyone wanted. But it's 6 days. Like, how is a fighter able to get ready for fighting for a title in less than a week?
Yeah, it's not ideal. It's not the ideal situation. Yet, if you talk to Jorge Masvidal's teammates, you know, Dustin Poirier was saying recently, and he's a teammate down there at American Top Team in Florida, and he was saying that Jorge was helping him train for his fights. You know, he fought Dan Hooker not too long ago, and that he was training as if he was going to get the Kamaru Usman fight, even after it seemed like talks had broke down and the UFC was going to go with Gilbert Burns instead when they couldn't agree on a financial situation with Jorge Masvidal. And he said he just never really got out of the gym, that he was working with wrestlers. He was doing all the things that he would normally do if you were going to fight Kamaru Usman for the title. So it's possible that he wasn't, you know, that out of shape or anything when he did get the call. Still, 6 days to just get your mind right and do all that travel and take a whole bunch of coronavirus tests, it's still kind of a stressful situation. But the good news for Jorge Masvidal is he's a veteran of the game. He's 35. He's been doing this since 2003. It's one thing if you take a 24, 25-year-old fighter who's never really been in a big fight before and you throw him into a title shot on 6 days' notice. That's a lot to ask, and it's still a lot to ask of anybody, but when you're a veteran who's been through it before, I've had fighters say to me that the advantage of getting a short-notice fight like that is there's not too much time to sit around and think about it, psych yourself out, and there's not enough time to overtrain and wear your body down. So, you know, there are some pros and some cons here for him, but for Jorge Masvidal, it's kind of now or never. This is the opportunity, this is the fight everybody wanted, and it all kind of worked out, at least for fans, to get the actual fight we wanted for the title here.
I think you answered the question that I had on my mind, and as much as preparing himself, Masvidal, it's, is he prepared to fight the style of fighter he has to fight on a short notice? But I think you said that he was basically preparing as if that were going to happen, even if it weren't.
Well, that's what we've heard anyway. And there's also, when you're fighting a guy like Kamaru Usman, who he is known for pace and pressure, he's not necessarily known for putting people away all at once. He wears people down, and he just is unrelenting. And if you're going into that fight and you kind of know what your own cardio situation is and what your own preparation level is, you might tailor your game plan around that. If you know that you don't have five hard rounds against a grinding wrestler who is just going to be kind of nonstop, then maybe you go out there thinking, I need to end this early, and maybe I'll take some chances in order to make that happen, because I don't want to be here in round five. And, of course, Kamaru Usman, he might know that that's on Jorge Masvidal's mind. We all saw Jorge Masvidal start off a fight with another really good wrestler in Ben Askren by just sprinting right across the cage and kneeing him right in the head, and it was over in 5 seconds. So, you know, that's a really good trick. It's a tough trick to pull off twice, though.
UFC Fight Island goes this weekend in Abu Dhabi. Ben, you do phenomenal work for The Athletic. I know you'll be all over it, and we appreciate you coming on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
There is Ben Foulkes from The Athletic with UFC 251, UFC Fight Island. And we transition, Dave, to the news we've been waiting for all week. We got some breaking news. There you have it. Bob McKenzie reporting the NHL and the NHLPA have ratified both the CBA extension and also return to play. This is what we are expecting, Dave. This is what we are obviously hoping for. It is a silver lining in a very tough circumstance, but it looks like training camp is going to begin on Monday, and we have labor peace now for 6 years.
Yeah, and it would have been fun to be on that call, particularly on the players' side, and listen to some of the concerns that they have, but also listen to the voice of reason, and that would be Donald Fehr, that said, hey, guys, the time and place to do it is now, and we have it in place. And to think about labor peace in the NHL for 6+ years, because there's actually, I believe, a contingency that may stretch it out a little bit longer than that if certain conditions are met. Mm-hmm. But just the amount of work that's gone into it quietly, you know, we see the final results. We see, oh, you know, it's ratified. But the amount of late nights and the amount of work that has gone into this on both sides, and you've got to give a lot of credit to the people involved, you know, as challenging as this time has been for everybody over the last 4+ months, to think we came out of it with a new 6+ year agreement for labor peace in the NHL is really astounding.
And it's an appreciation of what everyone is going through. And sure, the players are going to be hit hard by this, but they understand that the owners are as well. And the owners and the league are losing money on this. And so you're able to come together. And it's not like it was, you know, singing kumbaya throughout these whole meetings, but you compare that to what baseball went through a couple months ago, and the contrast is pretty evident there. It really is, Mark,
but you know what I think here is, for the first time in our lives, this has affected everyone in the world. And so in the past, when you were in labor situations, you were in your own little world, right? You had a labor situation going on. Well, then your next door neighbor didn't have anything going on, and the guy 3 doors up, you know, that you hung out with didn't have anything going on, and the guy across the street that you rode your bike with, he didn't have anything going on. This time, everyone in the world had something going on while these players were going through this. And so I think it's a realization of what it is. I mean, we're in unprecedented times. And, you know, smart people realize that, and we're able to pass that message on to any of the dissenters who maybe were affected individually, because guess what? It's not a great year to be an unrestricted free agent. Well, that's the luck of the draw.
Yeah.
It's not a great year to be an unrestricted free agent. You know, that's just life. But it's life that's affected everyone, and the right people got that message across to the group of players. The communication throughout, not only between the PA and the NHL, but within those respective groups, has been really, really good, and communication has won out for the day.
Yeah, and you look at the other side of things, if it wasn't ratified and they didn't come together, it's a real grim picture.
No question.
Bob was going through a lot of those details earlier this afternoon. I don't have to enlighten you with them because, well, they're irrelevant now. We don't have to worry about them, but you think of, you know, what kind of, you know, hole they have to all climb out of. That hole would have been much, much deeper if they had not been able to come through. And you hope that they're able to restart this season, play the Stanley Cup playoffs in both Edmonton and Toronto, and salvage some of this season. Let's take a quick break. When we return, we'll continue on with the breaking news. As Bob McKenzie has reported, the NHL and the NHLPA have ratified the CBA extension and also return to play.
Back to Overdrive.
Wrapping up the show and wrapping up the week here. And this is how you wrap up the week, Dave. If you're just joining us, we broke
big news
with the news that Bob McKenzie is reporting. The NHL and the NHLPA ratifying the extension of the CBA and return to play. And all signs point to training camp beginning on Monday. And just as you finish all this work that goes into place to accomplish something like this, the next couple of weeks will be tough as well. And we'll really be...
Get to the 26th.
Yes.
Get to the 26th. Get to the 25th, your travel day to the hub cities. You know, a message to all NHL players. The next 2 weeks are going to be the most important weeks for you, because you're on your own. Handle it.
Right. And it's...
That's it.
And really...
Simple as that.
It's the responsibility of players to be living at the rink for training camp and really at home. Like, it's... Like, the moment that...
No question about it.
And I know that's... It's tough to say you can't have a life, but if Austin Matthews or Mitch Marner is spotted at Loblaws, people are going to go, oh, crap, like, this is never going to work, right? And you and
yeah,
I...
There's way more pressure... Yeah, there's way more pressure. You're not being told what to do right now, Mark, for the next 2 weeks. And in 2 weeks, you're going to be under the team's control, and you're going to have your peer pressure right beside you with your group. But right now, you're not for the next 2 weeks. I mean, this is it. You're on your own, and you got to handle it well. Because if we can get through as a sport the next 2 weeks, this really has a chance to go.
I want to ask you, from a player's perspective, what Monday would be like. But you would know, because no one's ever gone through this. But I have to think that everyone is just, they've never been more excited to practice as they will on Monday.
Well, you saw it when they first got back together. And I believe those were groups of six when they first happened. And then they grew to 12. And you play the game because you love the game. Mm-hmm. You're a little kid. And I didn't skate a lot in the summer, because I was so excited when I did put my skates on in late August. I mean, it was really exciting for me. And, you know, I'd been 3 months without them, and coming off whatever I'd done in the spring, where however far I'd gone, I literally didn't skate for 3+ months because I wanted to feel that excitement and that energy. And, you know, I didn't want to take it for granted what I did for a living. And it worked for me from a mental and a physical standpoint. And that's the way they're going to feel. Now they're going to see everybody for the first time. They've seen them in pieces, bits and pieces, but now everybody's back. And you know, and you're going to work, and that's what you're doing. You're going to work, but believe me, it's a labor of love.
And of course, if reporters are allowed to ask questions on Monday, it'll be, so how are you going to score against Columbus? Are you working on that already? Like, what's going on here? Like, how are you going to beat that Torts and his system, right? Like,
yeah, I think it's more what you did during your summer vacation that wasn't supposed to be a summer vacation.
Wow, that too. Who knows? Who knows what Freddie Anderson and Austin Matthews got up to in Arizona?
By the way, Freddie Anderson was number 6 on my list of 5 for most excited to watch play.
Yeah, I think on a different list, he's definitely there. Like, players you're focusing on, for sure he's there, because there's not a player that will determine the success of the Maple Leafs more than Frederik Andersen. And I know that's a boring answer, because every goaltender has the biggest say in a playoff series.
Yeah, do you think Montreal is saying about Carey Price against Pittsburgh?
Yeah, exactly. It's no disrespect to Max Domi and Brendan Gallagher, but Carey Price is going to decide whether or not Montreal can be competitive in that series and maybe push the Penguins to an upset. But Frederik Andersen has questions to answer after the last couple springs. And not to say it all fell on him, but, you know, last year, Rask was the better goalie.
Yeah, I think it's more from the last couple of falls, not the last couple of springs. I mean, this is more fall than it is spring. You have to get back, and you have to play first.
Right.
And he has not started off great. And that's why the focus is going to be on him. He's got to come back and right from day one be really good, and then it will look after itself.
Yeah, but there's so many fans in Toronto, you know, are excited to, like, I hope this is October hockey, because all we do is score 7 goals a game, but they don't always get the goaltending early on in the year. So tons to talk about on Monday's show. Brian Hayes will be back in this chair. I'm not exactly sure who he's working with, but either way, at 4 p.m., they'll chat
then.
Absolutely.